Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. Today on the HR Power Hour, we're going to have two great guests. First, John Brubaker. He is the author of The Coach Approach. Coach Brew will today be talking about mistakes leaders make when team building. Second, we're going to be talking with Susan DeGrandpre. She's the author of Common Sense Workplace Mentoring. And to that end, today we're going to be talking about corporate mentoring, programs that work, and programs that don't. And you're here and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, and we're talking to John Brubaker, or Coach Brew. And we're talking about mistakes leaders make in terms of team building, especially when they're trying to develop team building challenges and enhance their leadership, and they do it the wrong way. John, thanks for being on the show.
Hey, thanks for having me here, David. I guess you put the power in Power Hour.
Absolutely. We have fun. We love it. It's a great time here. I got to tell you, the audience has been fantastic, and it's been a lot of fun. I'm enjoying it. So, hey, you know, we've been talking about team building many times on this show. We've had a lot of conversations about national speakers coming in, talking about the ways to do it, what is the most effective way, things that should be happening, leaders should be doing this, that, and so forth. But what I want to talk about is some of the mistakes, kind of behind the scenes, some of the mistakes that leaders make in initially starting to think about, hey, what would be effective for my team? So what's your take on something like that?
If you fall and hit your head after you listen to this and you don't remember anything else, remember this one thing. A little a lot is better than a lot of little, folks, when it comes to team building. When it comes to anything, really. But the biggest mistake that leaders make, or managers, or HR makes, is that they think, you know what, it's that time of year, you know, we have some division or a couple new hires. We need to do team building. So let's carve out a half a day. And it's the only time they do it all year. And they spend a day or half a day off-site. And let's say they decide to go to a ropes course, because that's kind of the popular sort of shishi thing
wall
to do.
Wall climbing, yeah. Rope courses, yeah.
What happens when you tell them they're going to a ropes course and they don't want to go?
I don't know, John. What happens?
It's packaged as fun, but it's forced fun. It's not something they want to do. So instead, A, ask your team what they want to do. What would be meaningful? What relates to our job? Because if you work at an accounting firm, are you climbing on high ropes every day? No. And I understand they tie in kind of a metaphor with the high ropes and teamwork, but if they don't want to do it, they're not going to get that metaphor, and they're not going to get the takeaways anyhow.
Well, you know, it's interesting. So I always say, what is the goal? Let's start with, what is the goal that you're trying to accomplish? So at the beginning of the process, if you're trying to build a collaboration between organizations, between people within an organization, and you're trying to build teamwork, but you're also trying to build fostering goodwill, and you're trying to have some fun, because, you know, in a lot of mission statements, we want to have fun, or values, we want to have fun. And you've had a challenging year, and you've had a challenging situation, and you've had maybe a downsizing, or maybe you've had a sales line that isn't really working up to speed, and you want to do something different. These are typically reasons why people do things like that, mm-hmm. Right? I mean, that's why they do it. Why shouldn't they think about something totally out of the box?
You can think something totally out of the box, but people support a world they help create. Ask your people what would be meaningful for you guys, for you ladies and gentlemen. Because I think that, again, you know, too many leaders, managers, HR people make the mistake thinking team building is something you can do in a day. Oh, we got a couple new people. Let's have a team building retreat. It's not a once in a while thing. It's not a one day thing. It's got to be an everyday thing throughout the year. So, yeah, you can do an offsite, and I facilitate a ton of them, but what's the takeaway when you leave there that you can apply every single day? It needs to be grounded in the core values of the organization or the department. And it's great to have that mission statement and to have, like you said, fun be in it. But what does fun look like? You know, how is fun tied into the deliverables at the end of the day for that sales team? You know, here's what it looks like in our organization, in our department. Here's what it looks like for us in our community as an organization. Because ideally, you want to have those community roots, and you want people outside the community saying, wow, they really are a team. We see how they're working together with, you know, Habitat for Humanity or whatever it is. And then all of a sudden, you become a magnet for talent. People want to come work for you when they see that, because I think people want to be part of something bigger than themselves ultimately when they choose to go work somewhere.
So let's get a little tactical for a second.
Sure.
So you're saying, and I happen to agree, that you ask the team, mm-hmm. ask the group what they want to do. That could give you an incredible array of answers, because people have their own personal choices. People have what they like to do. People want to necessarily do different things. How do you coalesce that together when there's such a diverse group of answers?
Well, the first thing it does is people want their voice to be heard. You know, a lot of times there's a direct line from the suggestion box straight to the paper shredder. In a lot of companies, they don't read those suggestions. They don't take that feedback. They don't listen. So if you're just being listened to and then those ideas are actually applied, how does that make you feel as an employee? Your voice is really being heard. In a lot of places, maybe for the first time. But you're never going to get consensus, and you know, it's not a democracy. But to have them talk about it, have them have some dialogue, breaks down some silos before you ever actually do the team building, have them come to an agreement of here's what we're going to do and here's why.
Do you think it's effective to provide maybe a list of four or five ideas and allow them to select from that list, if you want to say, knowing that it's still not a democracy and mm-hmm. that the leader really kind of has a little bit of say into what exactly they're looking to do? Do you think that's an effective tool?
You let them come up with four or five, it's even more effective. But absolutely, people like to have choices, but if you have 40 people, you might have 40 different ideas. Good luck executing all that. Yeah.
Right. Well, I mean, it's leadership by committee, right? Sometimes.
Sure.
So you bring them together and you say, okay, we'll take a group of four or five people, we'll bring them together, we'll come up with some ideas in terms of that to make that work.
And I got a great example of why you ought to listen to your people. Quick story. I was working with a beverage company, and I'll just put it to you this way. They're not the king of beers. They're number two, but they try harder if they were Hertz, you know?
Yeah.
But fourth quarter, they're looking to make a push, talking to me about how can we, you know, really – kind of hit our numbers for the year. And I said, you know, how do you typically set your employees' goals for the quarter, you know, when you're looking at their metrics? And he said, you know, we tell them kind of here's your target and here's what you want to aim for and here's how we incentivize you. And they have this huge complicated matrix for how they're commissioned and incentivized on all these different products. I'm like, you know, I said, did you ever ask them how they wanted to be incentivized? No. Did you ever ask them, if you could set a goal for your sales for this quarter, what would it be? No. Sorry. So why don't you as a leadership team meet and decide what you think their numbers ought to be, but then bring them in individually and ask them, hey, set your own goal for this quarter and choose your own incentives. Here's what happened. They set their own goals. Every single person set their goal higher than management would have dictated to them. And when they chose their incentives, most of them were non-cash incentives. I'd like a couple extra days off. I'd like flex time so I can be at my kids', you know, soccer mm-hmm. games or whatever yeah. it is, a health club membership. You know, things like that. It ended up costing the company less money. They're up 20%, and they never performed so well in the fourth quarter. So now it's a best practice. And it seems simple. Hey, you bring in a consultant to tell you to listen to your people. Yeah, sometimes you can't see the picture inside the frame.
No, that's very true. I think, you know, I think we all have great examples of saying how companies can really use basics. It's back to mm-hmm. basics sometimes, and it really is listening to and being in tune with what's going on. But sometimes you don't have the process in place. Sometimes you don't have the ability to do that, or sometimes the leaders aren't really listening overall
exactly.
in terms of to what the employees are looking for. All right, so we've talked about, obviously, one challenging aspect of team building and kind of in the process of how you go about maybe making that suggestion. Do you have another suggestion in terms of a tip or best practice when you're thinking about team building leadership as to what not to do?
What not to do would be a lot of little. Like I said, a little a lot is better than a lot a little. It's an everyday thing, not a once in a while thing. So find a way to build team building into everyday life. Something as simple as, because you know, when you do it once in a while, it wears off when you come back from that offsite, from that retreat. It wears off like a sunburn unless you reinforce it every day. You know, and there's a reason we brush our teeth every day, right? It's something you have to reinforce. It could be something as simple as at the end of the day or at the beginning of the day, huddling up and just sharing some success stories. Letting people, you know, sales teams, they deal with adversity all day, every day. They're told no 99% of the time, a lot of them. Give them a little bit of a forum to kind of vent at the end of the day together, problem solve. And A, they're sharing ideas, they're sharing solutions. B, when they vent, they can leave work at work before they get in the car and go home. Something that simple really is team building, conversations.
Well, you know, I think a lot of the major problems that companies, organizations go through is they spend a ton of money to make sure that they do these exercises, but they don't reinforce them.
Exactly.
They don't spend the time to reinforce it. I know that, you know, plenty of examples where I've gone into organizations say, you know, so you're going to do a great, you know, retreat, and we're going to do all these wonderful things. What are you going to do 3 months later? What are you going to do in a month? What are you going to do in a week? And they just kind of look with that. No, we're just doing the retreat because we're going to solve our problems there. No, no, you're not, right? I mean, you're not going
to
solve the
problems. It's like trying to put a Band-Aid on an amputated limb.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. And so I think you're right. There is a reinforcement needed through the process. So how does a leadership team, again, being a little tactical, how does a leadership team change the processes within an organization to do that follow-up? How do you see a good process in place?
One of the things that I really like, I worked with one leader. He inherited a new company. And we had him literally sit down with every single employee and ask a simple question. Why do you do what you do the way you do it? And there's only one unacceptable answer. Because that's the way we've always done it here. He was willing to listen. Yeah. To any other answer, solution, piece of feedback, other than that's the way we've always done it. And it's interesting, the people that gave that answer either were reassigned or voluntarily got off the bus and got on another bus, so to speak. But just the fact that you're willing to have those conversations when you either inherit a new team or you're trying to rebuild and you're trying to drive a new initiative. Well, why do you do this? You know, there's a lot of value to creating best practices, but you've got these silos built up in companies and people aren't talking. People have their own agenda. And when you can get that out of the way and get other ideas on the table and it benefits everyone, you'll be more cohesive.
You're absolutely right. We're talking with John Brubaker, or Coach Brew, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com, a news talk, WLOB, and we'll be right back. If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to CMAcareer.com.
Hi, this is Peter Boldick at Harvest Hill Farms. For those folks who are looking for healthy eating alternatives, we have been raising natural range-fed beef and poultry right here in the great state of Maine for over 15 years. Let us introduce you to our Never Ever program. Our animals are never ever introduced to growth hormones or antibiotics, only raised as nature intended. We are conveniently located on Route 26 in Mechanic Falls. To find out more, call us at 998-5485 or go to our website, harvesthillfarms.com. That's harvesthillfarms.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, and we're talking with John Brubaker. John, I got to tell you, we've been talking about some of the challenges, some of the things that happen when organizations try to do team building, try to do leadership development and training, and they go out and have a good time, but they do it the wrong way. And we've talked a little bit about, you know, taking them for retreats and taking them out to, team build on rope climbs and different things. What are some of the biggest challenges you see to getting everybody involved? You know, one of the things we find on these events is that leaders get frustrated because they've got maybe 75, 80% of the team on board, excited. Even if you've asked them the question and it's their idea, there's always going to be a couple, right, that just are like, this is dumb, or this is not why I'm here. I don't understand. How do you engage those individuals? How do you try to, you know, get a leader to engage them other than simply saying, you know, thanks, have a nice day? Excluding that option,
sure.
How do you bring them into the fold?
I think everybody operates under the assumption, what's in it for me? You know, the old WIIFM, everybody's favorite radio station. Yeah. What's in it for them? If you can't...
No, News Talk WLOB is the favorite radio station, John.
Okay, this is preset number two on everyone's dial. WIIFM, what's in it for me?
Hey, thank you.
But, you know, that's everybody's MO. What's in it for me? You know, we're kind of in free agent nation when it comes to talent and people's jobs and companies. And some people have one eye and one foot out the door. So you have to relate to them on their level. Here's really what's in it for you. If you do this, and if you can tap into their talents, their unique abilities, what kind of charges their batteries, then you'll get their buy-in. But until you find that out, you're going to be spinning your wheels with those people. So it's investing the time up front with the ones that you know aren't going to be real quick to buy in.
I think you're right. I think, you know, certainly there is setting expectations at the front end, right? Making sure that people understand it is mandatory. Mm-hmm. We are going to do this together, but here's what benefit it brings to you in your position.
Did you just say you think I'm right? Can you say it again?
No, I can only say it once. I can only say it once.
David, I don't hear that a lot at home. I got a wife and two kids.
The dog
doesn't even think I'm right. So just say it once more, please.
You were partially right. And does that make you feel better? I just want you to feel at home.
Great. You just graded me on a curve.
No problem. No, but you're right. I mean, and I will say you are right. The fact is that, you know, people have to spend the time to invest in setting the expectation. Now, I guess the question I would ask is, you maybe don't know what the major takeaway will be when you come out of these events, right? You really don't know because things evolve as they go along. How do you set the expectation with your team that is not too low as to look ridiculous, but not too high to make it just out of the park? So how do you as a leader make that happen?
Again, I'll go back to my a lot of little theory. I think that when you can get people comfortable with being uncomfortable a little bit each day, when you really need to push them hard, you can. I look at team building as having four stages. The first one's a shared goal. Second one's shared adversity. That's how you really kind of get them to push and become a little closer is through. You think about any adversity you had, you know, in your family. Usually kind of circle the wagons and get closer as a result. Same thing in companies. And the third step is individual responsibility, tapping into that one thing each person's great at. And then the fourth one is when you can tie that all together, you get that sense of collective pride, you know, where you've accomplished something and you're moving the ball a little closer to the end zone. And to be able to reinforce that every day after, quote, the event is really powerful.
Do you think that it makes sense to have them share what they learned, not necessarily at the event, but maybe a month later, a week later.
A day later, a week later, a month. Yeah, you know, every day. Here's how we apply it. And I think when you can create some common language, you know, I think every in the fabric, every organization, there's certain, you know, vernacular, but we can create common language around that experience. And you get them talking about it afterwards. You see sports teams do that. If you went to watch the Red Sox practice or take pregame or whatever, you'd hear words, and I don't mean four-letter words. I mean, you hear words where you didn't understand what they were talking about. They aren't even baseball terms. It's just part of the fabric of, you know, kind of their team. But they all know what it means, and it's usually performance-related.
No, this discussion is really about doing it right the first time, because you only get one chance to make a good first impression. And mm-hmm. if this is the first time that your organization is doing team building, or you're a new leader and it's your first time going out, or you know what, if you want to change the dynamic, right?
Yeah.
And because you've done them in the past and you want to try something different, you only get one chance to make that happen.
Well, quick thought, David. How much turnover is there right now? There's a lot of, like you said, downsizing, but they don't call it that. They call it right-sizing.
Right-sizing, the new term, yes.
Yeah, there's a lot of turnover, people coming and going. Think about this, leaders who are tuned in right now. Every time you either have a person leave your team or you add a new member to your team, you go back to square one in terms of team building, forming, storming, norming, performing. Every time someone comes or goes, no matter if you're at step four where you're high performing, you're going back to the forming phase because it's a new group.
And we're going to leave it at that note. Where can somebody go and get your book, The Coach Approach?
They can go to my website, which is Coach Brew. It's coachbru.com.
Can they go to Amazon, too?
They can go to Amazon, too.
I figured as much. You never know where people want to go. John, I want to thank you very much for being on the show today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
We will be right back on News Talk WLOB. If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
Are you frustrated with medical care today? Does it make you angry that your doctor spends more time looking at the computer screen than at you? Does it seem like your doctor is out the door in 5 minutes? There is a better alternative. At Champy Family Practice, Dr. Michael Champy and his dedicated staff make taking care of patients their priority. They are a cash-friendly direct pay practice, which is the perfect option for people with no insurance, high deductibles, and health savings accounts. Unlike other practices, they post their prices in the office and even online. Get modern medical care delivered the old-fashioned way. For more information, call ChampyFamilyPractice.com. That's C-I-A-M-P-I. Or call 774-1222. Champy Family Practice is located at 380 Lincoln Street in South Portland. Champy Family Practice. Continuing a tradition of medical excellence in Greater Portland since 1959.
In today's digital age of instant communication, the art of conversation is being lost. Too often, verbal communication is reduced to shouting, not talking. Join me, Steve Woods, also known as Steve-O, for Tide Smart Talk with Steve-O, for inspired conversations with extraordinary guests. We'll talk sports, health, green, and life its own self. Catch Tide Smart Talk with Steve-O, Saturdays, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on News Talk WLOB. AM 1310, streaming live on WLOBradio.com.
And today we're talking with Susan DeGrandpre. She's the owner of Collaboration Consulting and the author of Common Sense Workplace Mentoring. Susan, thanks for being on the show.
David, thank you for inviting me. It's great to be here.
Yes, it's great. I've known you for quite a while, and you do some great work, especially in the area of mentoring, so appreciate that.
Funny, that's what I'd love to talk to you about today.
Shocking, as they say. So today we're going to be talking about, obviously, leadership. And we're going to be talking about leadership because, first of all, you're one of the hosts on the Leadership Lab, which is done here as a radio show on News Talk WLOB.
Yes.
So congratulations on your show, by the way.
Well, thanks. It's great fun to do. We've got some valuable stuff to put out there.
No, I think it's great. So we're talking about leadership and some of the mistakes leaders make and some of the things they have to think about, especially when they're dealing with growing their business or operating a business. You have an example that you're going to provide, and we're going to talk a little bit about and the success of it. So first, let's set the stage. Tell me a little bit about this business. Tell me a little about what's going on with it, and then we'll get into how they're succeeding.
Yeah, let me set the stage. First of all, what do you think of my hair?
Well, for those on the radio, it looks great.
Okay, and that is a totally relevant question. I want to talk about Acapello Salons and June Giuliano, the owner, but to set some context, June has been successful in her business for many years, started out as a solo, and as she became more successful, she has added and added to her staff and added locations such that she has four locations now, has not only survived the economic downturn, but actually grew during the economic downturn. And when you think about it, getting your hair cut or getting your makeup done is not exactly fundamental to your life. So she just has an amazing way of working. Pulling that back to leadership and what leaders can do right, June's secret is that she uses everyone in her organization to co-lead with her. She's a brilliant businesswoman. She can run an organization very profitably. She has a keen sense of customer service. She really knows how to pay attention to the people in her organization, and she knows that she can't move ahead if she's the only one leading. So she has installed a mentoring system and actually has reorganized her business to accommodate that, such that in every location she has coaches rather than store managers. Her staff are artistic people, and they are drawn to coaching as opposed to being manager sorts. So she's really revamped everything to get the people on her staff to be co-leaders.
Well, it's an interesting topic. I mean, I think one of the things that HR professionals and business leaders listening today would say, wow, having a coach rather than a manager. That's an interesting idea. But what is the practical reasoning behind it? And how does that work any different than really being a manager? Clearly it does. Clearly it works. Explain the difference.
Yeah, what June has done has been to separate the administrative HR kinds of functions from the job performance coaching. There is a wonderful woman named Tina Preble, who is her HR manager and administrative manager, who leads and mentors a team around the administrative work. So people who are highly talented in and attracted to that aspect of the business do that work. The coaches are the supreme stylist, the supreme artist, if you will. The wonderful woman who does my hair is a master colorist, even though she's a little discouraged that my hair has no color, as she puts it. Gray, for those listening. Jen Gammon is her name. Jen coaches everyone in the whole organization on coloring. She's almost a chemist. Each location has a couple of coaches that coach people on whatever skills they need to develop. June hires very talented, very eager, very team-oriented people who are trained to some degree, but they don't know the acapella way of doing things. So they really need to get enculturated. Coaches have actually gone through a boot camp that June ran for a period of about 6 months, where they worked together, they learned together, they had assignments, things to read, things to do, such that by the time they came out of the other end of that program, they really knew how to coach performance. The current iteration of that, now that they're done with their boot camp, is that they kind of do boot camp for the rest of the staff. They are the trainers. I've had the privilege of going to a couple of the workshops that they've put on. I tell you, I could not have designed, as a trainer, as a facilitator, more impactful learnings. They're just phenomenal. They come from the heart. They get people doing activities and doing homework, and it's just amazing to watch. So not only are they coaching their peers, they're actually learning training skills, leadership skills, facilitation skills, design skills. It just magnifies. And every single person there takes responsibility for the success of that business.
We're talking to Susan DeGrandpre, and she is the owner of Collaboration Consulting. And we're talking about, you know, really a good example of how mentoring and leadership works. You know, I'm sure that over the course of June doing this program and this process, she's encountered some challenges. You know, probably people that may not have lived up to the expectation that she thought that would be, or maybe people who didn't embrace this change, this development. You know, you've worked with her, you know about the program. Tell maybe the audience about some of the challenges they get faced when you start bringing these programs forward and how you can effectively make that happen.
The one big takeaway from my working with June, my observing June and other companies as well, is that when there is a good mentoring slash co-leadership program in place, people are getting so much attention and so much feedback that if it comes to a point where they're just not working out, it's obvious to everyone. So the pain of separation, if you will, is really minimized. To generalize from June's experience, I would certainly encourage any managers, any leaders to know their people perfectly. Find out what their skills, talents, aspirations are, what makes their hearts beat faster about the work, and find places for them in the organization so that they can really live up to those dreams that they have. The people who work at June's Acapella Salons have dreams. Then to make sure that coaches or mentors are put in place to help them achieve those dreams. It could be the peer sitting next to them. It could be a more formal leader. Another piece that I would strongly suggest is that managers and leaders should have mentors. June has been so successful because she knows she constantly needs to be learning. So she has used a succession of mentors in the various stages of her business to make sure that she does stay successful and keep growing and keep ahead of the curve. She wins awards all over the country.
You know, it's interesting when you think about a small business, because this is a small business, obviously, growing. Mm-hmm. She's taken the time, right? The time and the investment up front in her people. So I think about organizations that may be a little bigger, or maybe HR leaders that are listening today and saying, that's great, that sounds like a, you know, Ivana, right? Nirvana. It's a wonderful utopia. It's taking the time to make that happen. But I'm on a tight budget here, and I'm on a, you know, I've got these concerns about, you know, we've got no time to do anything, and you know, we have projects to get done and things to make happen. What can you share with those, you know, leaders and dealing with the reality of their situation? To get them to understand that this is still an important part of the retention, part of their growth, part of them, you know, making sure that they keep their people in place and keep the talent within.
Yeah, it's a retention, it's engagement, it's how you move your business forward. I would encourage managers to dust off their metrics. Working with people in such an attentive way should be measurable. Can you really afford to not know your people, and what are the results of that? If you're hastening to get finished with a project, what happens when people are kind of stumbling and bumbling and conflicting through that project such that the results aren't what you want? So I think metrics are very, very important. June certainly is measuring productivity. She's measuring morale. She's measuring customer feedback all the time.
Well, you know, certainly it's a retail business. You're bringing, you know, it's B2C, B to customer. Mm-hmm. And the reality is that every person that walks in the door matters. And not that that doesn't mean in B2B it's not that way. It actually is the same. But you tend to find people think of it differently. And in fact, that's the mistake, is they should think of it the same way from the internal customer perspective.
It's all B2C, absolutely. To drift off to another example, I spent many years at L.L. Bean, and that company has to be the supreme example of how absolutely everyone is thinking of external customer. I in the accounting department, or I in the creative department putting catalogs together, am thinking about that external customer. You've got to have that mindset, particularly to remain competitive today.
Well, no, there's no question that when you're thinking about the competitive environment, you know, we're talking about retention, we're talking about the talent war that will be coming. I mean, Right now we still know it's an employer's market in most areas, but there is a shift coming. And I think it's important to understand that this is one way to start thinking about succession planning, to start thinking about, you know, how to grow your organization, keep the knowledge within your organization. I mean, agree?
It has everything to do with succession planning and the retention of intellectual capital, if you will, to use those buzz phrases. When you are using a system where everyone is engaged, everyone is focused, A, on the goals of the organization, and secondly, on their own goals, you have at every level of the organization, every position of the organization, a way to keep people moving forward, a way to keep people feeling like this is their business and that they're as invested as the CEO. It's very important.
We're speaking with Susan DeGrandpre, the author of Common Sense Workplace Mentoring. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB, and we will be right back.
Turkeys, turkeys, turkeys. No, I'm not talking about the members of Congress down in Washington, D.C., but rather the large, fresh, range-fed, raised-the-way-God-intended turkeys at Harvest Hill Farms. For the third year, Harvest Hill Farms is donating a Thanksgiving meal to families in need. If you know of a family whose struggles would be helped by having a Thanksgiving dinner, simply email me, ray@wlobradio.com. That's ray@wlobradio.com, and tell me their story. Turkeys are also for sale for your Thanksgiving table. Order your farm-fresh, range-fed turkeys now by going to harvesthillfarms.com. Don't forget, if you want to donate a turkey or turkeys to families in need, Harvest Hill Farms will help you make that happen by going to harvesthillfarms.com. Harvest Hill Farms, raising turkeys the way God intended, farm-fresh and range-fed. Go to harvesthillfarms.com for more information. That's harvesthillfarms.com and order your turkey now.
Running a company can feel like you're surrounded. A key person quits. A big project presents itself. You need good people fast. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Our contract staffing service will fill a position or find the right talent for a short-term project. Hundreds of companies choose us because we deliver people that fit. Career Management Associates, your contract staffing solution. Go to cmacareer.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by cmacareer.com. And we're talking with Susan DeGrandpre. She is the owner of Collaboration Consulting, and as we've said, the author of the book, Common Sense Workplace Mentoring. Susan, again, thank you for being on the show.
Thank you, David.
You know, we talked about the first segment being about some example you provided about June and her organization, and how she really has been able to grow the organization with mentoring and providing really an understanding at every level of the organization of how it works. We talked a little bit at the end of the segment about succession planning. And I think that that's a good place to continue, because succession planning today is really something that's very, very important. And a lot of organizations are not doing a lot of it. Some are, some aren't. But we're hearing it through you know, our discussions, that they say it, but they don't necessarily do it. And I believe part of that is because they don't necessarily have a process or an understanding that it's not as hard as it looks. It may be hard to make the decisions within the process, but not as hard to put together. So, Susan, tell me what you think is a way that an organization can use this process that we're talking about today to really make succession planning work for them.
I will, and I just want to pause for a moment on your point about how organizations aren't doing this. And back to June again, she and I spoke at a conference a number of years ago about succession planning. And I asked for hands. Who in this room thinks succession planning is a good idea? Everyone raised their hands. Okay, who in this room actually has succession planning in place? Nobody. It was stunning. Succession planning is a logical application of mentoring slash coaching in the workplace. Oftentimes, when it does happen in organizations, it will happen at the top. Bright talent will be carved out to find out about the entire business and become prepared to take over some of the senior level management positions. I really believe that succession planning has to happen throughout an organization, such that every role has people that are ready to move into it. Part of that has to do with hiring, as you well know. You want to be hiring people who are capable of, you know, bumping up a couple of notches in the not-too-distant future, should there be room for that. You want to be hiring people who are not only good at their technical skills, but they're real creative thinkers. They can problem solve and anticipate changes that need to happen. Because filling a slot 5 years from now, thinking of grooming someone for that, it's not going to be that same position. Not at all.
Well, you know, it's interesting. When we're talking about succession planning, people think that sometimes that's just about internal talent. But it's also about external talent,
sure,
as well. And providing the fact that you want to keep the intellectual knowledge, yes, but it's always good to bring in new ideas from the outside, right? And so it's really looking at your overall talent base and saying, yes, this fits exactly as we expect and plan. But, you know, we may have a need based on future plans to bring in some outside talent as well. And so I think mentoring allows that to work both ways.
Absolutely. And you've mentioned the word plan a few times. Plan is the key. You don't want to be simply promoting internal people by default. You don't want to be hiring external people by default. There needs to be that plan in place that talks about what you think is going to be needed in the future and how you can get there. So definitely it's a mix of internal and external. And sure, mentoring works with both populations.
You know, it's interesting when we do talk to individuals about succession planning, one of the things that we hear is, well, we've done that in the past, but kind of sat on the shelf, right? It kind of didn't really happen.
Hmm.
And I think what people have to realize, and I'm sure you would agree, is that succession planning is ongoing. It's not just you make a plan, it sits on a shelf. It's not quite that program. It's an ever-evolving process.
Absolutely.
You have to come back to it. You have to keep working on it.
You have to do it. It's a way of doing business. It's not a document that sits on a shelf. You know, there are legal ramifications that need to be in the document. The more important part is that you have to actually be thinking that way. Everyone has to be identifying talent internally, externally. Everyone has to be identifying needs. I want to give you one example, another small business called Tidestone Solutions. Sandy Wyman is the president. Sandy, again, is a very strong leader business-wise, people-wise. She is in the software technology business, and they have to run so fast to even stand still. And in fact, they're not standing still. They're moving ahead. She is constantly identifying and having her employees identify what lies ahead, what's it going to take to continue to expand our business, to continue to serve our customers technologically and service-wise, because things do change so quickly. She is constantly mentoring people. She has people constantly mentoring each other. And she fills the needs by doing succession planning. She'll identify someone who has skills maybe in the sales area. And, well, how can we develop that individual to meet this future need of a particular kind of sales? or service or any particular aspect. She definitely has a team environment. The whole team is working towards the future. The team moves and changes itself to fill the new roles, which again happen very, very quickly. So it's a real succession planning as a way of daily doing business.
We're speaking with Susan DeGrandpre, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour. You know, Susan, we've been talking about succession planning, but, you know, mentoring and leadership challenges don't just happen in the succession planning area. They certainly don't just happen when organizations are growing. Sometimes they happen when organizations have to contract. You know, one of the things that is always difficult for an organization is to understand that they have to make decisions sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
They have to look at their organization saying what's working, what's not working. And this is a process that mentoring really works well in, trying to understand how to help the, what we call the survivors, the people who are actually staying in the organization and help them in it. So maybe take a minute and explain, you know, unfortunately, if somebody has to leave, maybe it's one, maybe it's a riff, maybe whatever it is, and, and that's been taken care of. Tell the audience how you see that all fitting in with the people who are still there and making it work.
Yeah, they need reassurance that it's not going to happen to them, or at least in the foreseeable future. Environments where either through performance issues or through just needing to downsize, people who are left get very, very nervous about their own positions. Mentoring can definitely be a support, is a wonderful support there to help people understand how they're valuable, how they can make themselves more valuable, how they can, I'll say it again, take co-leadership responsibility for pushing the organization forward. Reassurance is needed at that point in time. In my experience, peer mentoring has been very helpful in those times, with people having some formal accountability, if you will, for helping each other through those tough spots.
You know, you mentioned co-managing, co-coaching.
Yeah, co-mentoring.
Co-mentoring. Sure. Somebody might say, well, wait a minute. I really think of a mentor as somebody who's an individual who just helps me, almost like a one-on-one type situation. So explain that a little, because I think it's important that people understand the difference.
Sure. Mentoring can be one-on-one, where somebody is more expert in a particular area or knows something more than someone else, and they help them. More often than not, the person who is in the formal mentee position knows a thing or two as well. So what happens in the ideal, and I see it happening quite often, is that the formal mentor will identify in the mentee some strengths that they would like to pick up on. I worked with a couple of people at Unum, in fact, who found that wonderful match of skills. A very experienced manager was asked to hire a manager who was new to the company. She had been at Unum forever. She realized that he had much more comfort with that level of people management. So they contracted with each other to do that co-mentoring. Co-leading, in the formal sense, means that a leader has to know that they don't have all the answers. They've hired good, talented people. Let's use them to help with that leadership process. The leader is not the big boss from the, you know, the old management models. The leader is a facilitator to get everyone going in that direction. And mentoring can be with groups as well. It's very possible to mentor a group as long as people are getting individual attention. And people within that group can mentor each other. I'm a great proponent of peers working with each other in such a way. Everyone brings different things to the workplace, different strengths, different areas where they can use more development. Everybody's got something to offer.
So I'm a CFO. I'm a HR business partner, and I'm someone who has a budget and has to think about, you know, how this impacts my organization. Are there cost savings with doing this process? Is there a way, as you said, to quantify in terms of measurable? Is it measurable on the dollar side, which is all important today in today's environment?
It is. Productivity curves are a typical measurement that people who are getting mentored tend to learn much faster than people who are not being mentored. It's just-in-time learning. So even though typical classroom training is still a useful tool for setting a baseline, people are not necessarily applying what they're learning right away. They kind of lose it when they get back to the job. So it's all applied. So that's another way of measuring how much effort and time in quote training, if you will, is being invested here. And if you're using in-house resources, people who are sitting next to each other, that's really cheap. They're already there. They're probably, because people just by nature want to be helpful to each other, probably already spending time helping the person sitting next to them. So why not formalize that a little bit and not have to use so many outside resources? It's much less expensive. It is an investment. So the upfront time money is a little bit more than it is later on. And, of course, that's all variable depending on what the content of that mentoring is. But eventually that person who is being mentored comes up to speed and beyond fairly quickly. Or, as we were saying, gets opted out fairly quickly, so you're not spinning your wheels and pulling your hair out trying to work with somebody who just isn't getting it for whatever reason. You know that.
I was just going to say, I think it's important to understand that with any program, with anything you put in place, there are going to be times that it doesn't work for an individual person or a group.
Sure.
And so, you know, you have to look at that and say, okay, you know, have we given it the best shot? Is this individual someone who wants to grow, who mm-hmm. wants to learn, who wants to do that or not? And then how does that affect the organization in terms of that? You know, whether it's that they have to be managed out of the process or whether they have to be taught in a different way. Maybe they learn in a different capacity, in a different way. Or maybe it wasn't the right match, if that does happen.
Absolutely, absolutely. And again, you catch that a lot sooner. One of the beauties of mentoring is that a really good mentor knows how to match the learner's styles of learning. So there is expected to be some flex in there. If someone learns one way, let's try to make the learning happen such that they're really going to be catching on fast.
We're talking with Susan DeGrandpre, and she is the owner of Collaboration Consulting. And certainly, if somebody wants to get a hold of you, Susan, because I think you've done a great job explaining exactly what it is that can be very effective for an organization in terms of mentoring and leadership development, what's the website they should go to?
Thanks, David. They can get a hold of me at susan@collaborationconsulting.biz, and the website is www.collaborationconsulting.biz.
And certainly anybody after the show can go to the HRPowerHour.com and see, obviously, Susan's information and bio and click directly to her links. This has been a great discussion about mentoring and leadership. And Susan, I want to thank you for being on the show today.
Well, thank you, David. It was a lot of fun. Great to see you.
It's great to see you as well. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on Newstalk WLOB. And now your HR Tip of the Week. I'm proud to announce that the HR Certification Institute, or HRCI as it's known, has launched two new credentials. The first is the Human Resource Business Professional, HRBP, and Human Resource Management Professional, HRMP, both of which are geared towards HR professionals principally practicing outside of the United States. These credentials were developed to validate core HR knowledge and skills in addition to demonstrating mastery of generally accepted HR principles, independent of geographic region. HRCI has successfully conducted pilot examinations for these new certifications in nearly 70 locations across 50 countries. The HRMP is considered a more strategic credential, while the HRBP is more operational in nature. And that's your HR Tip of the Week. Thank you for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 1310 a.m. or streaming live on WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.